So, morning we understood about something about yoga, Patanjali yoga system. Point number one was never to be confused between the yoga spoken in the Vedas and yoga spoken in the... Some problem with the printer? Then leave it. Maybe you should remove the cartridge and then shake it and then put it back. Yeah, I did not observe that. So what you can do is, just can, it's there in the computer. It's there, it's open document. Can do that? Yeah, at least a few. How many are there? How many are not come good? 15. 10. 10 more, okay. 10 more copies. Let's see. So, we should not be confused between the yoga mentioned in the Vedas. Yoga is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam to the yoga mentioned by Patanjali. Patanjali, conception of God is not confirming with the Vedic literatures. So Vyasa just uses only one sutra in the Vedanta, 2.2.3, second chapter, second pada, third sutra, he rejects. He says, as a Sankhya or atheistic and non-confirming with the Shrutis, in the yogas are also same. He did not discuss at all. And he says them, they are atheistic or yogas. He did not much talk about yoga, Patanjali yoga, in the entire Brahma Sutras. One of the reasons is, he already gave a commentary on the Yoga Sutras by Patanjali. He defeated him there. So, and also Sankhya, almost the theoretical aspect of the Yoga Siddhanta of Patanjali is Sankhya. So Sankhya has been defeated. So only one sutra in the entire Vedanta Sutra is addressed to Patanjali Yoga Sutras, defeating him, that's all. Just he stated they are not accepted by the Shrutis, that's all. So you must be thinking, for Nyaya Vaisheshika you gave something from Vedanta Sutra, and for Sankhya you gave, why did not give for yoga? So the question is, the answer is this. The answer is, only one sutra is there. That also very limited explanation, saying that, okay, as Sankhya is defeated, yoga is also rejected. As Sankhya is rejected, yoga is also rejected. Simple. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sankhya yoga pratakbala, pradantina pandita, Sankhya and yoga are same. So when Krishna says Sankhya and yoga are same, he is talking about devotional Sankhya and devotional yoga are same. He is not talking about the six systems of philosophies, Patanjali's yoga and atheistic Kapila Sankhya are same. Though they are same, we should not accept it is the same thing which is going on. As yesterday we went to a great depth to understand when second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is completely, has nothing to do with the Sankhya of atheistic Kapila. In the same way, yoga has got nothing to do with Patanjali yoga, devotional yoga. Sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks. What he speaks is devotional yoga. What is the proof for it? Mamanasmaram. Omitye kaksharam brahma mamanasmaram. That is the proof of it. Because Krishna says, while chanting home, think of me, ma. And Patanjali doesn't even mention Krishna's name in the entire sutras. Once, there was a small... there's a class going on, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur called all his sannyasi disciples, and asked them to write an essays on the Vedanta. They're great Sanskrit scholars. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur collected all the intelligent people in India and made him his disciples. All the intelligent people in India, they're captured by Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. Selected one, kept him. And Prabhupada was the topmost among him. He collected all the unwanted people in the world and made him his disciples. The exact contradiction. Prabhupada went around the world, went to America, he found, oh, hippies, you don't want them, society doesn't want them, okay, we'll take. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur took the most wanted, means the most precious people in society in India. The contrast, like Madhva and Ramanuja. Madhva used to just go and then used to talk to the king or the leader, the Brahmin leader there, that's all. The most popular Brahmin scholar, that's all. He would not even talk to anybody. He used to just bless and go. Ramanuja went and then embraced all. You're rejected from the society, you come to me. So hippies were rejected, rejects the society. In India also, when in hostel, they were frustrated, nobody has any friends, that person comes to our program. A congregation, everybody kicked him out of the house, nobody cares for him, that person comes to our program. So anyhow, what were you talking about? I went on a different subject. Sankhya and yoga.
The proof of that Patanjali yoga is not from the Bhagavad Gita, you said Krishna said you have to remember me while doing your
asana. We have to remember Krishna while chanting Om. So that shows that it is devotional. Devotional Sankhya and devotional yoga. So devotional yoga, I talked about a story of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. Okay, he called all the sannyasis. And then asked them to write an essay on Vedanta. So all the sannyasis, they were very enthusiastic, very intelligent. Slowly.
I got on this question. Where is the folder?
The folder is on the desktop, they Shad Darshan. In that you have to open karma. That's all. Just open karma. You find the same thing will be there. He called all the sannyasi disciples and then he started writing. They made a huge, big essays and then gave to Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur called the cook from the kitchen. He called. They thought he's going to order some nice, wonderful feast to be made for all of us. They're very happy. He told the cook, you take all these papers and correct them. Give the markings for them. First, second, third prize. So shock for the sannyasis. What is this he's telling? He called the cook. He doesn't even know proper Bengali. They're all essays written in Sanskrit. Then the cook was completely, Maharaj, what are you telling? You need to correct it. I don't know Sanskrit. He just told, you check in the paper, you just give marks according to the number of times Krishna appears in that thesis, in the paper. As many times the Krishna word you find in the Vedanta, in their papers, that pin number. Somebody has used Krishna 50 times, 50 marks. Somebody has Krishna 60 times, that many marks. So whoever got the highest number of Krishna's names in the papers, first mark to him. So actually this is the essence of all Vedanta. Just the name is the essence of all Vedanta. That is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Vidya Vadhu Jivanam. Vidya Vadhu. Vadhu means, what do you say, wife? Wife is Vadhu. Wife, na? Wife is Vadhu. 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 Vadhu means wife. 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 Like a husband would feel his life incomplete without a wife. In the same way, the transcendental knowledge, even though Jnanamalam Niranjanam, without the holy name, it is lifeless. So, wifeless life is so miserable for a husband. He feels, why to live? What is the use of my life? In the same way, transcendental knowledge without the holy name has no value. So these yogas, Patanjali, he doesn't mention even Krishna's name. He says Ishvara, Ishvara. He talks about Ishvara Pranidhana. Oh, you surrender to God. God helps you at every step. All these people, this because these Patanjali Yoga Sutras become so famous in India. Earlier, they used to say Ram Ram, and they used to say Hare Krishna, Radhe, everywhere that was a thing. Now we say God, God. Actually, Prabhupada when establishes Kant, somebody advised him, why don't you put International Society for God Consciousness? Prabhupada was so averse to this word called God. Because it's coming from Patanjali, because he says Ishwara. Mm-hmm. Ishwar, Ishwar Jante. Who is that Ishwar? Nobody knows. All the people in general society, they say, Ishwar. It's coming from Patanjali. Who is that Ishwara? It doesn't mention. Now we went through a lot of things in Patanjali Yoga system. And regarding Patanjali Yoga system, we understood about his God is somebody who is not the controller, he is not the creator of this world, and he is only he is not a conditioned soul, that's all. He is not just, he is not the controller. And also, one more thing is, these people argue that Veda is not the word of God. Vedas exist, that's all. This is also one of the big problems with them. As we know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has clearly told that this book is theistic or atheistic. You can give the answer. Because there, after liberation, they don't talk about Ishvara. And before liberation or before bondage, they don't talk about Ishvara. Ishvara comes only in the middle. So though you find Patanjali is talking about God and practically every 3-4 sutras he talks, use the word Ishvara. Ishvara Pranidhana, Ishvara Yogena, these are the words he uses, Pranidhana, Ishvara Yogena, because of you, Ishvara. Every 3-4 stokas it comes, sutras comes. So people think he is theistic, but Vyasa has proved he is an atheist. And many concepts which he has put forward about Chitta Vritti is not accepted in the Upanishads. So Vyasa says, though they claim Veda as their source of knowledge, it is not accepted. So all these things we discussed in the morning. In Dashtanga, we got 8 steps of his so-called perfection. And what else was there? I think everything was done morning. What dharana, what concentration, pratyahara, and also siddhis. We talked something about siddhis. Okay. I have a question on?
If this
distribute those things, two paper.
Vyasa rejected.
Yeah.
Patanjali's.
Yes, yes.
Teachings.
Yes.
Same time, we cannot deny that the practice of Patanjali Sutras gives some result. If the result is same. Is same by meditation, karana, all these steps of Ashtanga Yoga.
Definitely.
Maybe in Kali Yoga it doesn't give the visible result because people are too much miserable in Kali Yoga. But still, some people who have ability to be trained on Patanjali's, they have very nice. I was feeling myself. Lakhpur, CD.
Okay.
3 years, I got this CD.
Can you do it now? Can you do it now?
Because I'm not practicing. I have all sutras Patanjali.
Okay.
Flying, I was flying.
Is it?
Yes.
You are flying devotees. Prabhupada told the third generation will fly in the carpets. You're already flying. Without a carpet.
But
give me one.
Is there. You know, you cannot deny it's there. I was seeing and I was the first woman who started in a woman group. In a men group, everybody was very quickly. Ordinary people.
Yeah.
They don't know Vedas, they don't know this knowledge, they don't go. They're all working people, working some business, doing this, that. So only for improving health. They just came to this Maharishi Maharishi Yogi Center in Uzbekistan in Dashkent also because there was nothing else. And you know, they started to train us and after 3 years they just divided us according to our abilities. Somebody went to astrology, Jyotish. Right. Somebody saw another group, another group, another group, and they sent them all over the world.
Okay.
Maharishi Mandakini occupied one state in the United States of America.
Okay.
In Poland, his office.
Okay.
So many people. And you know, I was seeing the result. People come in some miserable, this mental problems. After war, whole war day, office, they come into, they blossoming. And after 3 years, I saw these people, they all left their jobs. They all left their jobs. Somebody became astrologer because they finished Jyotish course of Maharishi. Another one finished this.
So ultimately, he made him the astrologer. Even that is why Patanjali was breaking his head. The purpose of yoga is chitta vritti nirodha. And now the purpose of they use Patanjali yogi and made that person an astrologer. Astrology is actually if you talk about astrology to Patanjali, he will just say get lost. Because astrology is increases chitta vritti. Astrology increases chitta vritti. That is why astrology is considered the most dangerous thing for devotional service. Most dangerous. Because, now that is actually another subject matter, is the karma kanda. Because karma kanda we need to study very nicely, in the sense that there are certain things in the karma kanda which seems to be devotional. When you accept it, you are devotional, you completely destroy it. And one other thing is astrology.
About my own self, my own personal experience, I can say that if before this course of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi for 3 years, I was just all around this any idea of God or some practice or something, nothing, just living as ordinary people. But after these 3 years, I was ready
for Krishna conscious.
I didn't know about this con, about this. I was doing my doctoral dissertation, I was going to America.
No problem. Patanjali blessed you.
But you know, after 3 years, suddenly something happened. And immediately after Maharishi Mahesh started Aurobinda, I joined to Aurobinda group. And immediately, only for a few months, immediately after Aurobinda, I joined. The gate was open.
For?
I joined to ISKCON. You know, for 20 years I knew ISKCON.
Krishna saved you.
Through the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's practice, I just purified from all impurities being in me, meditation, deep meditations, following suchis.
I have a small thing to say, Mataji. Purification of impurities.
They are there.
It may happen. But it is said in the Bhagavatam, maybe by some tapasya, the impurities may be lost. But the impurity of Siddhanta, when it enters the consciousness, that is more dangerous. Srila Prabhupada accepted people if they had essential fall down. Okay. Come back again to ISKCON. But if somebody had a philosophical fall down, he rejected. So one essential fall down, other is a philosophical fall down. Out of these two things, the philosophical fall down is more dangerous and more difficult to get rid of. Essential fall down is not such a big thing. See, essential fall down, if you are in a group of people who are not interested in lust, anger, greed, automatically lust, anger, greed, it's not a big thing to get rid of lust, anger, greed. You just have to be in the atmosphere, that's all. Because, according to Patanjali, Yoga Sutras, this point I did not elaborate on, he says that it is association. If you place yourself among the yogis, automatically you don't have any inspiration to participate in sense enjoyment. So conquering over lust, anger, greed, the yoga practitioners are like you told it, they just give it. But it is only to the time and extent you are with them. The moment you come out, like Prabhupada, he got these hippies in America. And then, just within few months and years, he sent 3 families to England. We know that story. And they had no association. These 3 families were not staying together also. But they not only kept their own senses under control, but also they converted the entire England. They made Beatles into a hippie, Beatles into a devotee. So this is what we are aiming for. Bhagavatam is one verse. I'll try to search it out and let you know. By doing these activities of austerity and certain things like this, you can conquer lust and anger. That's not a big thing. But you should pray to Krishna that he saved you from the philosophy entering into your consciousness in those places. It is your experience. My experience, before I came to Priskan, I was reading books of Yogananda and Vivekananda. It took at least 2 years for me to get these two ghosts out of my consciousness. Bhukti mukti pisachi yavat hidi vartate tavas bhakti sukasyatra khatam abhyudayo bhavet. Rupa Goswami says, as long as the tendency for bhukti and mukti is there, how can you enjoy devotion? So then, in that commentary, one place it is mentioned that bhukti is pisachi. How is mukti pisachi? Mukti is actually bigger pisachi. That is how Jiva Goswami defeated Vallabhacharya, a Brahmin. How? Even Vallabha had the same thing. How can mukti be? Mukti is good, no? No. That is worst. That is worst. So, good, those who are teaching, they were not knowing their philosophy. They were only knowing some practices, that's all. They were only knowing some practices. So, these practices, they taught you. You got over some things. Good. Actually, it is very good that none of the Mayashogi people or none of those people, they know their own philosophy. Like once Bhaktivinoda Thakur met a person. He writes in Tattva Vivek. He was a Jain. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he met him, this person told, I am a Jain. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked Jain, what is your philosophy? Then he told, what is there? बस भगवान है उनका नाम लो बस ये भौतिक जगत छोड़ के हमको मुक्त होना है वी गॉड इज देयर वी हैव टू चैंट हिज नेम एंड वी हैव टू गिव दिस वर्ल्ड एंड गो टू द किंगडम ऑफ गॉड देन भक्तिनाथ ठाकुर टोल्ड यू आर नॉट अ जैन यू आर अ वैष्णव सो देन ही टोल्ड दैट मोस्ट ऑफ द फॉलोअर्स ऑफ दीज फिलोसफीज दे डोंट अंडरस्टैंड देयर फिलोसफी They, when you talk to them, you will come to know that they just talk the general thing which everybody says. The natural tendency that there is God, you have to worship Him. Like that. Isn't it? Okay. This is one story. Another one. Rajneesh. There is a Rajneesh ashram in Bombay, small ashram. Somebody told me that why don't you go and give a why don't you come and give a lecture there? Yes, he knows one friend. He told, why not? So I went there. There are all kinds of people sitting there. And I started Jai Radha Madhav. And I gave a paper for Jai. And I also doing Jai Radha Madhav. And I asked them, how many of you read Rajneesh books? None of them. Like, the same thing in ISKCON. You go to some temple and ask the congregation, how many of you read Bhagavad Gita? Look like this. The same thing. So just because somebody goes to like you went to that, Mahesh Yogi. Have you read entire books of Mahesh Yogi? Okay, here and there something. But the practice, just the practice, isn't it?
You write that Prabhupada saved me because as soon as before joining ISKCON, I read Bhagavad Gita as it is. And immediately after 1 year, Maharishi Yogi printed his version of Bhagavad Gita.
Good. Okay, now we'll go to. I don't want to get into the morning. When we started the class, everybody was looking at him like, what is he speaking? When I spoke about how Patanjali is atheistic in the eyes of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then people started really listening to me. So I thought I don't want to get in the same situation now. So we'll start yoga with what Bhaktivinoda Thakur has got to say. Morning, really, Bhaktivinoda Thakur saved me. Otherwise, when I started, everybody looking at me, what is he speaking? He's a good person, Patanjali. He is just a critic, criticizing mentality. So now let us see what Bhaktivinoda Thakur has got to say about yoga, about karma, and then we'll talk about karma. This is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur Sattva Vivek. You can just note a thing. These are different sections about karma. I did not get that karma paper. Still being printed? That full. Persons of purified intelligence are not attracted to Gemini's Apura philosophy or the life force philosophy of some Western thinkers. Anyone who follows this philosophy has become cheated. In India, even the smart panditas who quote Gemini's Apura philosophy in their writings are all believe in God's grace and in all blissful experience in the spiritual world. If they knew the truth that Gemini's Apura philosophy is opposed to even God's existence, they would at once turn their back on Gemini and his ideas. Gemini knew very well that belief in God naturally stays in the heart of human beings. Therefore, in his Apura philosophy, he carefully and cunningly crafted an imaginary God who bestows the results of action. Thus, concealed under the cloak of a belief in God, the atheistic Karma Mimamsa philosophy preached by the Smartha Panditas has a strong following in India. Just see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur exposes everyone very, very strongly.
What's the name of his book?
Tattva Vivek. Morning. Yeah. Yeah, maybe I should give that book to you. I'll gift it. On the 11th evening, you take that book. So, it is seen that what is the beginning in unselfishness gradually turns into selfishness. To prevent this from happening, some atheistic Karma Mimamsa philosopher accept the existence of a single all-knowing God who gives the result of actions. Then they quote many passages from the scriptures to show how the worship of God is a part of Karma Mimamsa philosophy. In this way, they accept imaginary God. Comte, fearing that morality would not be taken very seriously, imagined a God that would be considered real. See, these Karma Mimamsa philosophers, he's a Western person who accepts the same Karma Mimamsa kind of thing. Because 90% of the Old Testament is also Karma Mimamsa. Most of the Old Testament is also Karma Mimamsa. So you find in Christianity a lot of rituals in the Old Testament. And people got fed up with rituals. And then this way they started becoming the Catholic, the other sects. I don't know much, have knowledge about it. But a lot of ritualistic things you find in the Old Testament. They mostly the Karma Mimamsa. And Gemini was most far-sighted. Comte trickery was caught, and therefore his idea of imaginary worship of God never attracted many followers. Gemini had a deeper understanding, and therefore his Karma Mimamsa philosophy did gain wide acceptance in Smartha Pandita community. And in the end, Comte and Gemini held the same philosophy. If one examines the idea and activities of Smartha Panditas, one sees that the Karma Mimamsa philosophy is untenable. What is not tenable? It is not tenable because it will never bring true auspiciousness to human society. Secularism, positivism, or Smartha Karma Mimamsa has no power to uproot sin. Rather, for many days they will make great obstacles to stop your devotion to God. Bhakti, devotion that is the true purifier of sins. Time after time, the Karma Mimamsa philosophers tell devotion to God. I am your follower. Tell to God. Philosophers tells devotion to God. I am your follower. I make people qualified to follow you. I purify the sins of people and place at your feet. These words are only cheating. They are not sincere. True karma is devotional service to God. As long as karma continues to call itself karma, it is not part of devotional service. When it is truly part of devotional service, karma calls itself name bhakti. As long as it calls itself the name karma, karma is a rival of devotional service and it always tries to make itself more important than devotional service. Karma claims that it helps philosophy, civilization and art. However, when karma comes transformed bhakti, the philosophy, civilization, art becomes much more glorious and exalted. At the time in India when the atheistic karma mimamsa was seeking material pleasures was very prominent, when the Vedas, which are filled with spiritual truths, were considered the only true scriptures, and when claiming that the Vedas teach the atheistic karma mimamsa philosophy, many materialistic brahmanas sought by performing yajna to attain sensory pleasure in this life, and apsaras and nectar in Indra's city in the next life. A certain person dissatisfied with material pleasure, a person named Sakya Simha and born in a Kshatriya family, deciding one day that there is no escape from suffering of the material body, that true happiness rests in cessation, nirvana of existence, founded the philosophy of Buddhism. This is where it started. Sakya Simha. The Kshatriyas, they became Buddhists, and the Vaishyas became Jains. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes. So that is why you find many Vaishyas, they are all Jains. And they are sucking the entire blood of every citizen in this country. That's sociology. We'll not talk about it. It was to stop the wickedness of Karma Mimamsa idea that the preachers of these Nirvana philosophers preached their own idea so fervently. So there's a big Buddhism came in and then they destroyed Karma Mimamsa because they got completely frustrated by these people. Because their whole purpose is to enjoy. There is no, on the name of spirituality, enjoyment has been the preaching. And then immediately the revolution took place. Because the Brahmanas, they were just into enjoyment. And the Kshatriyas, they did not like it. As soon as the Brahmins, they give up their tapasya, they are into enjoyment, the Kshatriyas revolt. Because of the Brahmanas' oppressive way and their embracing the Karma Mimamsa idea, the Kshatriya and other castes became very disturbed and staged a philosophical revolt against the Brahmanas. For this reason, Kshatriyas all accepted Buddhism and the Vaishyas accepted Jainism. When people divided into factions and hate each other in terms of factional groupings, that hatred can become very strong. Passionately loyal to their factions, people no longer give any thought to what ideas are logical or illogical. That is how Buddhism and Jainism were spread in India. They were also spread to other countries. Weak in spiritual reasoning, the people of those countries accepted those philosophies as sent by God. In Europe, some people who hated Christianity also preached the same philosophy, Nirvana. That is revealed in history. So now you see Prabhupada Krapa gives analyzes history and says that how because of this Karma Mimamsas, the atheism took a strong hold in the entire world. The reason for atheism having a strong hold in the entire world is this Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Because this Karma Mimamsa philosophy, you can see he's into enjoyment. Enjoyment like from the core of the heart. See, if the senses, the enjoyment is just hidden in the senses, it is not so dangerous. If the enjoyment is hidden in the intelligence, in the form of philosophy, more dangerous. Like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the lust is there, indriyani mano buddhir. Yes, adhishthana muchyate. Full words. Indriyadi mano buddhi yasya adhishthanam uchyate te te vimohiti tam jnana vijnana, something like that. So he says these three places the lust is hiding. If the lust is in the senses, okay, some sense enjoyment, okay. In the mind, a little bit more, it's okay. But if it is in the intelligence, in the purport, Prabhupada says, when the intelligence becomes corrupted because it is the next door neighbor of the soul, then there is no hope. There is no hope. Because everything what he perceives, he just thinks, how I should enjoy. That is the Karma Mimamsa philosophers. Going further, the author of the Karma Mimamsa Sutras, Jaimini, he did not write about God. He did not write anything about God much. His primary topic was pious deeds. He said, Chodana Lakshana Varta Dharmaha Karmeka Tatra Darshanat. Say, Karmeka Tatra Darshanat. Just be interested in doing rituals and karma. The Vedas is religion. The religion is called karma. And Sabaraswami, the major commentator on this, there are three major commentaries. One is by Sabaraswami, and another is by Kumaralabhatta, very famous. We find him in many with Shankara, debate with Shankara and all. And you have one more commentator known as Prabhakara. Three commentators. He says, Katam Punaridam, how should this be understood? It is understood in the term of Apurva. He says that Astitadapurvam, he brings the concept of Apurva, Apurva God. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, first pious deeds are performed. Then from these pious deeds, Apurva, abstract secondary principle is manifest. That Apurva gives the result of pious deeds. Why is there any need then for a God to give results for reaction? Now for them, for the Karma Mimamsas, for these Karma Kandis, I perform some action. The actions which I perform, they take a form called Apurva. Apurva means something which was not there before. So the Apurva enters their consciousness. And this Apurva gives the result of their karma. And the Apurva gives the different bodies, different species, and it goes on controlling the person's life. So this Apurva is the God of the Karma Mimamsa, which was not there before. The very word states Apurva. Apurva means before. Apurva means not before. Something which was not there before. According to the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, God is created by my karma. And because I created God, my karma, he should listen to me. I do good, like you just heard my mother used to say this thing. Oh, my dear son, you do good, you will get good. You do bad, you will get bad. That will means what? By my doing good, God has to give me good. He is forced by my karma to give good. So, karma is the governing principle, not God. God is only just a bank account to give your karma. That's all. So at least Patanjali told God everywhere. But these people, Apurva, it's too such a horribly dangerous philosophies. And now they pose themselves to be, oh God. They do Satyanarayan Puja, they worship Krishna, they worship Narayana, they worship Durga, and they chant Vedic mantras, they do so many things, but ultimately these karma kandis, they are actually not God conscious at all. Now we know in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavatam, How does the Bhagavatam start? Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Stam. Dharma Praujita. How does the Bhagavatam end? Sarvadharman Paritecha Mamekam Sharanam Vacha. So, the Vedanta Sutra starts with Adhado Brahma Jigyasa. Whom is this statement meant for? It is meant for the Karmakandis. He is addressing the Karmakandis. Generally we say, now therefore you have got a human form of life. Enquire into the absolute truth. So tomorrow I am going to give that entire explanation in Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But actually it is telling to the Karmakandis, now you have understood that karma is not going to satisfy the soul. You enquire into Brahman. That's the actual interpretation of the verse. But when you are addressing an audience of very new, you just say, now since you have got even form of life, you inquire into the absolute truth. But actually it is addressing, now we have understood that karma or enjoyment is not going to satisfy the soul, material enjoyment. So you take up inquiry into Brahman. So entire, in the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna, he says, yatha te moha kalilam buddhir vititarishyasi tatha granthasi nirvedam shrotavya sutayasya cha. Very important verse in the second chapter. Especially after 39, yesterday we discussed about 39. The 40 is niyabhikram nashosti prathivayar vidyate sarvam pesya dharmasya rayato matopayat. The next one is vyavasayatmika buddhir. Something like that. He addresses this karmakandi as Bhushaka. So in that particular place, before explaining karma yoga, before he comes to the point of 47th verse where he says, karmanyamadhikaraste mafaleshkaradena, first he destroys karmakanda. Because there is a now people naturally, they are not very intelligent. They cannot differentiate between karma kanda and karma yoga. That is the reason, first, before explaining karma yoga, Krishna talks about karma kanda. And then says, it is moha kalila. Just see. To say the entire Vedic literatures of the karma kanda as moha kalila. Kalila means forest. The forest of illusion. In the Bhagavatam there is the forest of enjoyment. He says, moha kalilam. Itate moha. Buddhir vetitarish. Since you are very lucky not to be, your mind, your intelligence was not stuck up in the moha kalila. Tada granthasi nirvedam. To such an extent he says, trigunya vishaya veda nistraigunyo bhavarjuna. Nirdvandvo nittasastasto. In yogakshematnavan, you do karma, you do work for me. Now, many people in India, even when they read Bhagavad Gita, they think Krishna is telling to do karma. It's a big ignorance. Whenever somebody calls me to give a class on Bhagavad Gita, I just speak on this topic only. So many of the people think that Krishna says to Arjuna that you do your duty. But Krishna, nowhere in Bhagavad Gita, he told Arjuna should do his duty. Why? Krishna has to come down to tell you that you should do your duty. Your boss is enough for that. Isn't it? When you go to work, your boss is telling, do your duty. Isn't it? The duty is not an important thing. Even a donkey is doing its duty. This is my regular lecture. A donkey does its duty. What is so big thing in duty? Duty, duty. Because wherever there is duty, there is right. That is how Karmakanda starts. That is how Gemini's sutra start. People are interested only in rights but not in duty. They should do your duty, rights will automatically follow. They will be forced to get the rights. Even if you don't want to get the rights, you will get the rights. So just do your duty. So that is how this Karmakanda session starts. Let us see how Jaimini, disciple of Vyasa, Karma Mimamsa, karma means activity. And Mimamsa means complete analyzation. The word karma refers to any action, the result, that result is in the action, whether it's good or bad. The word Mimamsa means analyze, to analyze and understand thoroughly. The Karma Mimamsa system is called also Purva Mimamsa, also known as Purva Mimamsa, which means earlier study of Veda, and the Vedanta is known as Uttara Mimamsa because it's the later study of the Veda. As simple as that. Earlier study of the Veda and the later study of the Veda. Like we know the Vedanta. Anta means end, which comes at the end. So in the beginning of the Veda, in the previous part of the Veda, you find lot of karma kanda. Okay. The main goal of the Karma Mimamsa philosophy is to provide a practical methodology for the utilization of Vedic religion, dharma, for the satisfaction of the urges of wealth, artha, and sensual pleasure, kama. So based on dharma, you get some artha, money, and use that artha for dharma, for kama based on dharma. So dharma is the basis. Based on dharma, I earn some money, artha. I spend the artha to satisfy my kama, that too based on. So this is known as Vedic sense enjoyment. Religious sense enjoyment. So religious enjoyment, irreligious enjoyment. What is the difference? The difference is that of a wine shop. There is a wine shop where everybody is fighting. Leave that, fighting is going on. There is another wine shop. Everybody is wearing suit, boots, standing in a line. And he comes, he gets the money. He gives the money and takes the bottle. Says, thank you. Or have a good night. So whether religious enjoyment or irreligious enjoyment is enjoyment. That's called karmakanda. So as a wine shop, whether it is a systematic, organized wine shop or a unsystematic, chaotic wine shop is a wine shop. Wine shop is a wine shop. So, dharma, artha and kama is viewed like this by the Vaishnavas. In the Veda, numerous gods and goddesses are invoked. Karma Mimamsa system also discusses the science of sound and the science of mantra. Too much of discussion is there about the science of sound. And their discussion about the science of sound is accepted 100% by Vyasa. The science of sound, you cannot beat the explanation given by the karmakandas, because their entire thing is based on that actually. Chanting mantras from the Vedas. Of course, goals may be different, but the way they analyze the sound of the Vedas, it's like we can see in the further pages. Two pages is totally dedicated to that. I don't know whether we'll be able to really do that or not, but still, you just have some understanding about it. And the science of mantras, the science of sound and mantras discuss a lot. The aim of all this is to suit the selfish and skeptical human being in the mode of dutiful subordination to the Vedic injunctions. So, we are subordinate to the Vedic injunctions, we chant the Vedas and fulfill our desires. The Krishna also a little spoke about this thing. Yeah, because he said, Puro Vacha Prajapati, what is it? The demigods I set up in this way. That's many people are the concept of duty. You see, this is how the whole Karma Mimamsa philosophy starts. Many people are concerned about their rights, but little aware of their duties. Unless one knows what one's duties are, he cannot understand what his rights are. Demanding rights without accepting duty leads to many problems, as is evinced by today's chaotic global society. It is because of the law of the duty that family, society and nation and the entire universe continues to exist. The execution of duty handed down by higher authority in the path of honor is all in all human creatures. Conversely, the path of dishonor is the greatest is the neglect of duty for the satisfaction of animal urges. History teaches us when the family, society and nation fails to fulfill traditional duties and instead follow the whims of lust as their own value system, they are soon destroyed. So this is how he talks about duty. He establishes, because duty is like the heart and soul of Karma Mamsa. Like bhakti is heart and soul of a devotee. Duty is the central aspect. It is a pivot of the entire Karma Mamsa philosophy. Now duty, in the Sanskrit word for it is dharma. The term dharma is variously translated virtue, duty, morality, righteousness, religion. But no single English word conveys the whole meaning of dharma. According to the Karma Mamsa surface system, dharma is the intrinsic nature of dhrita. Now, they try to explain dharma in this way. Dharma, the dhatu is dhrit, dhrit dhatu. Dhrita means breath. So breath means only by breathing we live. So by breathing I live. So dharma, if you are breathing and you don't perform dharma, then you are wasting your life, or you are just misusing your life. And disturbing other living entities, being disturbed by the rhythm of the cosmic breath, and that is called adharma. The performing of dharma establishes peace and harmony in the breath of the cosmic life. All those activities that coordinate one's individual life, universal life, constitute one's duty or dharma. These activities are prescribed in the Vedic literature. So where is this dharma? It is all in the Vedic literatures. There is always a hierarchy in one's duties. So Karma Mimamsa talk about this thing. Karma Mimamsa proclaimed that the Vedic rituals are the highest duties a Brahmana has to perform. The science of Vedic rituals is handed down by ancient sages, who laid its methodologically in arcane language that is understandable only to the initiator. The efficacy of the science is determined by the subtleties of time, place and circumstances, the performance ritual, and especially with the Brahminical qualification of performance ritual. Therefore, entrance into the practice science depends completely upon the sanction of higher authorities. Now here, this Karmakandis, or Karma Mimamsa philosophers talk about duties. And in the duties, there are hierarchy. So they just talk about the Brahmins. So Brahmins, they can understand the Veda, and they are allowed to do the sacrifice. And on their authority, everybody should do. In other sense, he talks about Varnashram. The head of the Varnashrama is a Brahmin. So according to Karma Mimamsa philosophers, whatever happens in the society, anybody, whatever he does, they should accept the word of a Brahmin. So that is why you go anywhere in any village now, the Karmakanda is so spread that the Brahmins too can do advantage of it. Everywhere you just go, Brahmin. Whatever Brahmin says, I should listen. The Brahmin himself is eating meat these days. Okay. Ritual duty and philosophy. Now, very dangerous thing comes now. Just see. Doing the rituals is important, or philosophy is important. What they say. Most people lack a positive attitude of inspiration towards their duty. Daily duty. Performing them only to earn money. They do this thing only to earn money. So these Karmakandis, what they do, is they do all the rituals. And especially when they do the rituals, they do every ritual keeping God in their mind. That is what is their whole thing. The entire thing. Ritualism illuminated by philosophy gives one awareness of the deep significance of even the smallest duty of life. Everyone has a morning routine. Okay, something like waking up in the morning, going to the toilet, brush his teeth, and all these things are there. He does none. We generally people don't do with any sense of higher understanding. So there is no experience of any fulfillment. Now these karma mimamsa, karma kandis, for them everything is an experience of fulfillment. Okay. But viewing the daily, unexceptional routine of life as rituals linked to the cycle of the cosmos help expand the consciousness beyond the shallowness of workday life. In short, ritual is meditation. When Brahmana makes an offering or oblation to the fire of digestion within, remembering that the same cosmic principle of fairy energy burns within the bellies of all creatures and within the sun, and electricity and the sacrificial fire, then the whole process is transformed, although the activities are the same as always. Now just see this Karma Kanda. It talks about ritual, but whenever the ritual is done, along with the ritual, they chant some mantras. If you really go into Karma Kanda, to just wake up from your bed, you, by the time you have chanted 10 mantras. And you go to a bathroom and they do some gymnastics there. And how to come from the bathroom out? Washing teeth, sitting down, doing. For everything there is a ritual. The Karma Kandis are so much into ritual. I don't know how to express this because many of you are not really seeing them. I lived among them, that's why I know what these people are. You go in the house this way, hey, why have you come here? And then you say, where should I go? You go that way, hey, what are you doing? Get light lost. Now I have to take bath. I was like, oh, where should I go? What should I do? Nobody knows. It's very difficult to explain what they are. It's only that they have to experience only. You'll feel that you are like such a nonsense, you're idiot. They make you feel like that. That's called Karma Kanda. Everything they take a bath. And the ladies, they cook only with wet clothes. Of course, there's some achar, everything. But too much of Karma Kanda. And what happens after the entire thing? They watch TV. That's called Karma Kanda. So, there is no more frustration than living among those peoples, those who have to follow this Karma Kanda too much. Of course, even that's also lost, everything lost. But there is no big thing in that. There's too much into ritual, that ritual, this ritual. And every 2 days you have some vrata. Every 3 days something happens. Every third day, that deity and this, that thing. There's no talk about Krishna, there's no talk about philosophy, nothing. In the Karma Mimamsa concept, rituals are performed not... here, just read the second paragraph. This is where you understand, even though they perform the rituals, just see how horrible they are. In the Karma Mimamsa concept, rituals are performed not to worship or please any deity, but rather simply because the Vedas come and want to perform them. So in the Karma Kanda, when a Karma Kandi chants a mantra, the mantra may be glorifying Durga. They are not interested in what Durga is thinking. They are not interested in what she is feeling, whether she wants him to chant or not, nothing. They just chant. Because the Veda says, to chant, I'll do it. Whether Durga is happy or not, whether she is listening or not, I'm damn bothered about it. This is one attitude. But if you go further, you'll find that they don't even accept a personal demigod. For them, demigods are not persons. They are not persons at all. They are only creations of the mantras. When you chant the mantra, Durga appears there. Otherwise, Durga is not there. When she appears, She is not a person. That comes later. In the Karma Mimamsa concept, rituals are performed not to worship or please any deity, but rather simply because the Veda commands one to perform them. Thus, rituals are practiced for the sake of duty. Food is cooked, and through the use of mantras, the cosmic deity in whom the demigods and all beings dwell is invited to partake the food and grant blessings in return. If you see the meanings of certain mantras with the chant, they say, I have called you, why you did not come? In certain rituals, should I explain all the things? Okay, I'll just give a small glimpse. I have seen those things, that is what I'm telling you, in my childhood. They're trying to invoke a deity, a lower deity, not a very high deity. So the deity was not coming. The mantras, the person who is very expert in karma kanda can understand whether deity is come or not. So then there is a methodology of calling them again and then seeing whether he is karma or not by astrology. The astrology, there are a few Brahmins who make the astrology part of it. So what they do with the astrologer, he takes the, kaude. Conch dies. Do you call it dies? It's not dies actually. Conch through shells. Kadi. What do you say in English? This kaudi. Okay. So the astrologers are using that. If according to that thing which comes, if it is confirming, then the deity has come. Now this Brahmin would chant the mantra. There's some lower deities like Rudra and Bakala Bhairava and all these people are there. So they chant, giving offering. And they find as far as he's not come, this Brahmin says, I'll see this time, why he'll not come. And the meaning of the mantra is that I made the offering here, please come and accept. And this is the disturbance here, so you please try to get rid of this disturbance. And there are some glorifications of his whole thing. And after some time, it so happens that he comes, the astrology shows. And you see, where will he go? I chant the mantra and he doesn't come. The Brahmin says this. I chant the mantra and he is not coming. What does he think? He says this publicly to all the people who are sitting. It's very horrible. It is just written in a very nice way, but you really have to see. If you have to see, now it's very rare, but there's no use of seeing that. But this is the mood of those people who are chanting. It's like saying, you chant Hare Krishna and say, I'll chant Hare Krishna and Krishna has to come. It is not, oh Krishna, please come, I am chanting your name. not this, no. There's nothing like that. In this way, they invoke the deities. It's very, very cruel. Very, very. But the offering is not made as an act of devotion. It's not made as an act of devotion. It's a ritual. Rather, the Karma Mimamsa believes the Mahapurusha. Here the word Mahapurusha used again and again. Any deity, for the sake, is obliged for the ritual to accept the offering and give benediction. Among these, those who are like Karma Kandis, who don't want to worship the lower deities, they worship this Satyanarayana. Say, Satyanarayan Puja, Satyanarayan Vrat. This is also Karma Kanda. It has got nothing to do with that. Though there is Narayana and before him the Satya. Narayana is always Satya. Why use Satyanarayana? It may not be very appealing to the Western audience, these things, but the Indian audience know about these things. Rather, the Karma Mimamsa believes the Mahapurusha is obliged for the ritual to accept the offering and benedictions. Mastery of the ritual is merely over the power of the universe. But proper execution ritual performed expects to enjoy prosperity on earth and be promoted to heaven. higher planets within the universe, where the standard of sensual enjoyment is so high. Karmamsa system teaches that one can cut one's poisonous plants or past bad karma with the powerful acts of the present good karma in the form of performance of Vedic rituals. This is another fallacy in their philosophy. They say that you got a lot of misdeeds, bad karma, so you do the good karma. By good karma, bad karma can be nullified. And Prabhupada in the Upadeshamrita clearly says, good karma cannot destroy, nullify bad karma. Both the karmas have to be experienced. But these people, they say, no, you do good. That is why so many prayaschittas. In Karma Kanda, if somebody does any sin, so many prayaschittas are there. So, prayaschitta means atonement. Which one? Yeah, it is stated in the Vedic literatures. Do this atonement, but the atonement itself involves into so many activities by which the previous reactions, the bad karma, whatever you have done, they come during that atonement itself. The atonement itself is so rigorous. For example, according to previous karma, you are not supposed to get food for 10 days. Isn't it? The atonement says you fast for 10 days. Isn't it? You fast for 10 days. So you get your karma back. At the same time, while doing that, you perform good karma. It is just karma everywhere. Good, bad, etc. In the Vedas, there are three types of sentences. Three types generally are there, according to the Karma Mimamsas. One is known as Vidhi, other is known as Nisheda, other is known as Stuti. Vidhi means what to do. Number two, Nisheda means what not to do. And Stuti means glorifications. Now, according to the Karma Mimamsa, Vidhi is more important than Stuti. Vidhi means rituals are more important. Just do what Veda says. It declares that the imperative statements are more valid than devotional sentences. Stuti is like devotional sentences. They are not so important. The teachings of imperative sentences can therefore be accepted in practice, but the teachings of devotional sentences must be further analyzed to determine. He says, the devotional statements, whenever it comes for any deity in the Veda, should be first analyzed and then only accepted. Then only understood the core meaning. So that is their understanding of Veda. Just see how horrible, how cruel this Karma Mimamsa is. Karma Kanda is so cruel. Such a horrible thing. Oh, it comes the science of mantra. This part, Jaimini has very, very elaborately discussed. The power of mantra. What Vedic sound means. What the potency is there in the sound. The understanding. So I have quoted a small purport from the Bhagavatam to just understand that how difficult it is to understand. And also it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam to tell about that. The Veda is the embodiment of knowledge expressed in the form of sound. Karma Mimamsa accepts sound, Shabda, as eternal. They accept sound as eternal. So here we have to see, sound means Shabda, that is the Vedic literatures, they are eternal. Now, Karma Mimamsa's idea of Veda, they accept it is eternal. It is true. And they prove that Veda is Apaurusha. Apaurusha, we also prove Veda is Apaurusha. What is the meaning of Apaurusha? Not spoken by human. It is spoken by God. According to Karma Mimamsa, Apaurusha means which is not spoken by anybody. Neither The people of this world, nor the Parapurusha, anyway, they don't accept God. They exist. And they quote from the Vedas, Sasti, the Vedas exist, so you cannot claim any source for them, like that. They don't accept Vedas are the word of God. But Vedas exist. So that is their understanding of Apurusha, because they talk so much about Apurusha. They establish Veda like anything. It places great emphasis in the mantras than it does in the gods and the Jasi. They place more emphasis on the mantras than it does in the gods and the goddesses, because it only believes in the validity of science of sound on which the science of mantra is based. So they are not interested in the god or the goddess, they are only interested in the mantra. And many karmakandis, they just do sthapana of the deity by mantras. Like for example, Durga, they have a deepa. In the deepa, they invoke Durga by chanting mantras. We also do it, but not in the same mood. Like you have a pot. In the pot, you have the water filled and some the naryal kept. And by mantras, you invoke the deity. You can invoke Narasimha. You can invoke any deity you can. And worship that. So, in the Karmakandis, they are so, the rituals of Karmakandis, if you just go, anybody who even start cooking, a lady before cooking, she has to first make Ganesha and then cook. Otherwise, the cooking will not come proper. It's like that. I still remember, you know, they make this, that kind of things, that gold thing. What do you call it? No. The eatable. That chakli kind of thing. Chakli. You know what is chakli? Yeah? Not wrong thing. You make it? So, yeah, Maharashtra's made. For the data is there, isn't it? So now the karmakanda, according to the principles, the typical karmakandic principles, before you cook, you know, you have to worship Ganesha. So from the data, they make Ganesha. They make Ganesha. Just see. And then offer to Ganesh. It seems to be God conscious and then fry him again. They put that Ganesh which made the atta. I used to ask my grandmother, what you are doing? Why are you frying Ganesh? There is so much home. Of course, you don't find such grandmothers now. Ours, mine was the last generation which saw such kind of grandmothers. Now grandmothers, they watch TV. The karmakanda, grandmother, grandfathers, and great grandfathers. you would get frustrated. You will try to you would run away from them. The moment you see them, you're so afraid, because they would say something which it cannot be accepted by you. And if you go through some place, no, why do you go there? Take bath and come. How many times you should take bath? And you should remove the dress also. It's such a difficult thing. Anyhow, but no devotion, nothing. This belief accounts the Karma Mimamsa's trust in the efficacy of the systematic rituals. Karma Mimamsa states that the Vedic rites are grounded in empirical science rather than religious faith. It does not view the performance of the ritual as a means of imploring favors from the deity. Just see. They don't even are not bothered about receiving favor from the deity. They are just, I chant the mantra, Veda says chant the mantra, deity has to come and they have to give favor. That kind of thing. Even whether I want it or not, they will do it. Not be bothered about, just see how. You invite a guest in your house, I have given the invitation, you have to come. You don't come, I'll see why you don't come. When you come, I'm not bothered about you. I'll give you. You eat or not, I'll give you. And I give, if you don't eat, I'll see why you don't eat. What is this? Now, regarding this understanding of the karmakandas about sound, we have something about sound mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. From 11th canto, 21st chapter, 36th verse, purport. According to the Vedic knowledge, the Vedic sound is divided into four phases, which can be understood only by the most intelligent brahmanas. This is because three of the divisions are internally situated within the living entity, and only the fourth division is externally manifest as speech. Even the fourth phase of the Vedic sound called Vaikari is very difficult to understand for ordinary human beings. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains these divisions as follows. The prana phase of the Vedic sound, known as para, is situated in the Adhara Chakra, the mental phase, known as Pashyanti. The mental phase, known as Pashyanti, is situated in the area of navel, on the Manipuraka Chakra. The intellectual phase, known as Madhyama, is situated in the heart area, in the Anatha Chakra. Finally, the manifest sensory phase of Vedic sound is called Vaikari. Now, there are four kinds of sounds. The names are like this. Para, Pashyanti, and Madhyama, Vaikari. Para, Pashyanti, Madhyama, Vaikari. These are the four sounds. And the whole analysis of these four are done by the Karma Mimamsas. Finally, such Vedic sound is Antapara, because Anantapara, because it comprehends all vital energies within the universe and beyond, and is thus undivided by time and space. Actually, Vedic sound vibration is so subtle, unfathomable, and deep that only the Lord Himself and His empowered followers, such as Vyasa and Narada, can understand its actual form and meaning. Ordinary human beings cannot comprehend all of the intricacies and subtleties of Vedic sound. If one takes a Krishna consciousness, one can immediately understand the conclusion of all Vedic knowledge, namely Krishna Himself. Lord Krishna Himself, the original Vedic sound, original source of Vedic knowledge. Foolish persons devote their vital air, senses and mind to sense gratification, thus do not understand the transcendental value of the holy name of God. Ultimately, the essence of all Vedic sound is the holy name of the Supreme Lord, which is non-different from the Lord Himself. Since the Lord is ultimate, His holy name is equally unlimited. No one can understand the transcendental glories of the Lord without Lord's direct mercy. Offensively chanting the holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 one can enter into the transcendental mystics of Vedic sound. Otherwise, the knowledge of Vedas will remain durvigahyam, or impossible to penetrate. Now, in the purport, Srila Idharanand Maharaj explains that how even the most learned Vedic Brahmanas cannot understand the Vedic sound, what exactly it is. Only the Lord Himself, Narada, Vyasa, they can understand. Srila Vishwanatha Thakur has given some idea about it. Now, the same thing about Para, Pashyanti, Madhyama, Vaikari are explained by the Karma Mimamsas in a very nice way. Germany did a very good job in trying to explain this thing. So most part of this this paper is based on that. So means about a page and a half is there. So we'll try to read and try to understand what it is. Though it's very difficult to understand. After reading this, I'll give a small example to understand. Give a small some idea of what these four are, so that we can have an overview. But really, this paragraph is difficult to understand. Karma Mimamsa does not study sound only as it is articulated level, but explores the subtle levels of sound by dwelling into its origin and realizing its various vibrational patterns. So now, sound is not just sound. It is not just that vibration. There is something very deep meaning behind sound. What is sound? That is analyzed very nicely. Sound is called vak in Sanskrit. But this word cannot be translated merely as sound or speech. Vak refers to both thought and expression. So thought and expression is an aspect of speech. While speech is the communication of thought and feelings, though spoken word, through spoken words. Karmamsa categorizes vak shakti at four levels. Para, paschanti, madhyama, vaikari. As we read in the purport, Srila Vishnu Thakur mentions these same names, same four, they are found here. Okay? So, if somebody wants to know about these four in very detail, you can read the Karmamsas. And many, many scholars have written about it from taking this aspect. As far as this aspect of sound is concerned, description is concerned, there is no mistake done by Karmamsa. Small thing is that I'll tell at the end. Now, according to Karmamsa, there are two universally intervened factors in manifestation. Shabda, the sound, and Artha, the object, denoted by the sound. One signifies the name, and other signifies the form. They are inseparably associated. You see? Name and form. There can be no Shabda without Artha, no Artha without Shabda. Together they are the self-existent reality which is not subject to change, death and decay. As they manifest, a double line of creation, word and object, is formed. External sound, sensed, first talks about external sound, sensed by hearing is of two types, sound with meaning and sound without meaning. Sound with meaning consists of phenomena and words that make up language, but sound without meaning is formulated into words and is not recognized as an element of communication. According to Karmamsa, external sound is transient, but it is also a manifestation of the eternal sound in Akash. Now, they say, whatever we say, whatever sounds come out, it is already in the Akash, already in the ether. Then only we are able to make such a sound. The sound of barking a dog, any sound, it is there in the ether. It's accepted by the Vedanta. Nyaya school does not accept the Mimamsa theory of sound. It holds that words are transitory in every regard. So Nyaya is because they don't have any understanding of ether and all proper. So that is why they reject it. Because especially Vaisheshikas, they don't accept ether atom. Karmamsa counters that the perception of sound that begins when vibrating air contacts the eardrum must be distinguished from the sound itself. For sound to exist, one object must contact another, and that is an external event. But the Karmamsa theory of sound, which with meaning goes beyond this, including also the internal mental movements of ideas that seek outward expression through audible sound in phonemes, letters, words and sentences. That the perception of sound is transient, but the sound itself is eternal. The moment at which the sound can be perceived is not the same moment at which it is produced. Sound is manifested prior to being audible. Now, why so much of talk about sound? Because their entire philosophy is based on sound. I chant the mantra, the deity will come and give him blessings. I chant the mantra, I go to heaven. I get pious deeds. So the whole thing is just mantra. That is why they talk so much about sound. The final state of sound, called paravak, is perfect. The Karmamsa philosophy holds that eternal paravak is to be the cause of all causes. Now we say that paravak, or the sound, the level of para, is Mahavishnu's breathing, which precedes the appearance of the universe. Any appearance that can be perceived by physical instruments such as ears is only a gross manifestation. Physical sound is inadequate to attainment, ultimate state of consciousness signified by parava. So, normal sounds which we chant is not called para. The next phase of sound is called paschanti. There is only a slight difference between the state of para and that of paschanti. Both are transcendental, but in paschanti, the subtle form of the universe is seen. within sound as is seen within as within sound as the primeval artha or the object of desire. The word Pashyanti means one who sees. Note, prior to this, to his act of creation, Lord Brahma sees the subtle universe form after meditating upon the divine sound, tapa. So this is there, explained. And Brahma heard this para, the word tapa which was recited by Krishna to Brahma, that is known as para. Now when he started doing tapasya, it is said that para sound, para walk is something like this. Like Krishna. The Krishna and Krishna's name is non different. That is known as para. Now under the Pashyanti, Pashyanti means when you practice certain mantras or certain sounds, what happens is you can see the result in a subtle form. You're not got it. Like when you chant, it is something like the abhas. When you say Nama Abhas, when you chant the Hare Krishna mantra, so as soon as you say Krishna, Krishna is should be present there. He is present there. But at certain level, it is only abhas. So that is called Pashyanti. You are able to see a subtle form, that's all. Now going further. In this state, the power of the desire still remains dormant. But it is nothing less, the direct cause of the universe, which will be manifested as both idea and speech. This language of silence is a universal language. It is the source of all languages and speech. The third state of walk is madhyama, meaning that which is intermediate. This state of speech is neither transcendental, as in Pashyanti, nor completely manifest, as in Vaikuri, the grossest state of sound. It is between the two. Finally, the fourth stage of speech is completely manifest and audible. At this stage, a sound that belongs to a specific language can be perceived through the sense of hearing. This state of sound is always combined by geographical, cultural, social diversities and distinctions that forms different language composed of articulated and distinguished sounds. It's something like this. Pashyanti means, if I speak some Hindi, many people who don't know Hindi cannot understand. So that's called Pashyanti. To give you a very crude example, so now there is some word which I have to convey, something which I have to convey, but the language barrier is there. So what I do? I have to say somebody, a dog has come. But if I say in a particular language, that is known as normal Vaikari. But Madhyama is something like this. Hey, bhav has, then you understand, okay, this dog has come. So this actually, no, there is nothing transcendental in it. I make a sound which is beyond the barriers of language, culture, etc. That's actually known as Madhyama. Like sometimes in a drama, there is a communication, or they make certain sounds and certain expressions, certain impressions, which can be understood by everybody. So that can be categorized as actually categorized as Madhyama, intermediate. It's a different level of sound, especially in the Bharatanatyam and in Kathakali and all. There's a lot of communication which goes on. They don't require to speak to communicate to you. That is a little bit higher than Vaikari. Of course, Pashyanti and Para, they cannot, you cannot give an example for that, because they're transcendental. They're not within the realms of real expression. Like only Brahma could perceive, and the sages, how they received the Vedic mantras, that is actually Pashyanti. The sages, out of great meditation, they see the mantra purusha, and they speak the mantra. That is why they are known as seers. Seers means one who saw the mantras, which is there in the ether. According to the sound technology, whatever anybody speaks, though you may record here, it is actually recorded in the ether. Not only is it recorded in the ether, only those which are actually existing in each ether, only those sounds can be spoken or manifest. So the technology of sound, so much is spoken, we'll not just confuse ourselves with so much. All speeches that pass through the human mind becomes contaminated with the limitations of time and space and causation. The ultimate truth is therefore valid in everyday speech. But this is not the case with mantras. Mantras are not mere words, but specific sound vibrations. In Vedas, there are some mantras for which you don't have any meaning in the Sanskrit dictionary. They are only sounds, that's all. So that is why Vedas are known as Shabda. Shabda means just sound. Because they are transcendental, there are some mantras which are there in Vedas. If you go on chanting, the effect is same. Like the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, they talk about attaining siddhis by doing yoga. The Karmamimamsas, they also can get siddhis. It is not Karmamimamsas, they cannot get siddhis. Karmakandi. By mantra, they can do anything. Like we have many curse. What is the meaning of curse? Sharp, isn't it? I say, it happens. So, the sages used to convert by giving chants of mantra. And so, you'll become a dog, and you become a dog. You become a cat, and you become a cat. So, that is a higher level of sound. By chanting some mantra, you can make your object light. Make an object very heavy. So a mantra is therefore referred as to a setu, a bridge that students can use to cross over the mire of delusion and reach the other shore of absolute truth. Mantras are capable of lighting even lighting in every human heart, the eternal lamp of knowledge that does not flicker with the sewer of this just. Anyhow, we'll go to concept of God. God and goddesses, we'll just finish one paragraph of this and stop here. Go to the second paragraph. Some critics of Karmamimamsa of philosophy accuse the system of promoting polytheism, means many gods. But there is underlying unity. They say the underlying unity. What is that? The Karmamimamsa believes in an all-pervading consciousness that manifests itself in different stages, each of which has a different deity and sound mantra. Thus, exists the apparent diversity of deities and mantras to represent unitary consciousness. Now, they say, you've got so many gods and demigods. They say, actually there are no gods and demigods. There is some universal consciousness. They have some idea about this. When you chant a particular mantra, that universal consciousness takes this form of this god or the form of this deity. They don't even accept the existence of deities eternally. We say Karmakandis are deity worshippers. They are demigod worshippers. In one sense, actually they are not at all demigod worshippers. The demigods themselves will be afraid. You know, what is this? I am just a mantra or what? they reduce everything to mantra. For them, they Durga doesn't exist. When you chant, Durga appears. The mantra takes a form for them, actually. It is not that when you chant the mantra, Durga comes. That's Karmamimamsa. So much into this kind of using the demigods, so-called demigods, which actually for them don't exist. The Vedic demigods radiate from the source of energy that generates all forms of names. Karmamimamsa see them as thought forms that represent the cosmic power. You see, in one of the lines it is mentioned. The fourth from the bottom line. Just read that. That the Vedic demigods radiate from the source of energy that generate all forms and names. Karmamimamsa sees them as thought forms. Thought forms means, I think Durga is like this. Thought forms. Veda describes Durga like this, that is why Durga is like this. That's all. That represents the cosmic power. Karmamimamsa philosophy does not conceive of the demigods as being identical to the particular physical form. Something to be really, even we have to really feel bad for the demigods. just see, why do I appear for them? They should come here, ISKCON. Prabhupada, so demigod will take birth in ISKCON. Maybe that's why they take birth in ISKCON, I suppose. They are fed up with the karma kandis. They just see them as thought forms. Thought forms means, I imagine Durga form here. That's all. That's called thought form. It is not Durga's presence. It is thought form. So I think my friend is next to me. He's not here. But I think so. And that's for them, they're happy with it. If they are physically embodied, it would not be possible for a single deity to be present at many different rituals being performed. They have this idea that if they are really existing in their physical form, so there are so many people performing ritual, how can they be present at so many places? You see. So Vaishnavas, they are better demigod worshippers than these people. When we understand Shiva, we understand Shiva as a person, Durga as a person appearance. But here, yet it would not be correct to conclude. Mamsas thinks the forms of demigods imaginary. Some relaxation is there. The philosophy of the deities emerge as primal forms and sound bodies, mantras, endowed with bliss and happiness upon the mundane experiences. Yeah, bliss and happiness means it is just material. Though it seems that deity and mantra are two distinct principles operating on two different levels, in reality they are one and the same. The deity is a gross physical form of mantra, and mantra is a subtle form of deity. When the sequence of vibration of the mantra is materialized into a particular form or shape, then it's called deity. Likewise, the materialized form can be dematerialized and reduced to a certain frequency of vibration that will be heard as a mantra. Just see, this is their understanding of demigods. Which are these demigods? Karim Mamsa. So we have something like physical world and their sources of knowledge. Ultimately, we'll just go to the last point, concept of soul. We end with this thing. Other two things, we'll just do it tomorrow when we do the refutations. Karmakanda is refuted by Vyasa in the Vedanta Sutra and many, many sutras. It's a big notes. I'll try to give that. Because they are the major enemy for us. Even still today, for ISKCON, who is the greatest enemy? Within ISKCON, the biggest enemy for the preachers is the karmakanda in the mind of the congregation. Isn't it? The biggest, most toughest thing to deal with is the karmakanda in the mind of our congregation. So, Vyasa in the Vedanta Sutra, and he goes to very nice extent of saying how the karmakandas, they are not God conscious. The concept of soul karmakanda does not pursue metaphysics but instead emphasizes the practical approach of karma yoga. The word yoga has been used in the book. Actually, it's not used yoga there. Rituals have three components. Now just see. The performer, the object of the action, and the process of performing it. Bhoga, bhogya, bhogayata. So, there are only three things. The person who is enjoying, and the object being enjoyed, and the process by which he can enjoy. So the process includes the mantras and the demigods. The mantras and demigods are only a means to enjoy the object of enjoyment. So cruel. I worship you so that I can enjoy somebody. The main dominance of karma yoga, the main doctrine of karma yoga is as you sow, so. Not karma yoga, it's karma actually. Just delete that yoga there. Yoga means Krishna there. As you sow, so shall you reap. Accordingly, one is a master of his own destiny and is free to enjoy his karma as either master or slave. Karma Mamsa considers the soul to be an eternal, infinite substance with the capacity for consciousness. Just keep this in mind. I'll talk about it later. Implicit in the Karma Mimamsa philosophy is the belief that the soul is meant to enjoy matter. The cat came out. The rat came out. The soul's perfection is situated through perfectly following the karmakanda process by which all enjoyable things within the universe can be realized. The perfection of karmakanda is what? To realize all the enjoyable objects in this world. So, to realize all the enjoyable, this kind of lust, even the most lusty person in the world cannot even imagine this thing. Isn't it? I want to realize, people realize God and knowledge, people have heard. I want to realize all the enjoyable objects of this world. This is something which is out of the world. And now, when these sutras were written, as I told, there are 2,682 sutras. I told 72, not 72, it's 82. So many sutras are there. Then later on, Prabhakara, he told in the sutras, if we just talk about enjoyment, what is the difference between our philosophy and Charvaka philosophy? He also told, beg, borrow, or steal, and then drink. What is the difference? So, no difference is there. No, he doesn't accept God and we accept God. Then the argument was, see, everybody is talking about liberation. If you don't talk about liberation, then one of the commentators named Prabhakara, he explains that liberation by karmakanda, how the liberation is, when you experience all the sensory objects of this world, when you realize this, when you experience it, then you think, anyone have experienced all the sense objects, now I should get liberated. And what happens after liberation? The soul loses consciousness and it becomes unconscious. It is like you eat all the Mahaprasad and go to sleep. So it is this thing is mentioned by Prabhakara, not by the original commentator Jaimini. Jaimini doesn't talk about liberation. He never talks about liberation because liberation is Vedantists talk about it. So it's he doesn't want to talk about liberation. Now the real fight in the Vedanta Sutra is with these karmakandis. They are the biggest opponents. Sankhya, Yoga, Nyaya Vaisheshika, they are all done with. They are not big opponents. But he's a big opponent. As much as they are a big opponent for Vyasa, Vedantist, it's a big opponent for us also. It's not only just Karmakanda is in India. It's there many places around the world. Many, many places. Wherever some religiosity is there, it is more difficult to preach pure bhakti. Prabhupada was fed up in India because of this karmakanda. He went to places, he was begging, give me your son. I'll make him an acharya. But nobody cared. They used to worship his feet, they used to wash his feet, do all the rituals. But, so he chose, irreligious people are better. Better religious. This way he went there, the best. And to get rid of this karmakanda from the Indian congregation, I don't know who will do that. Somebody has to come. Somebody has to come. I cannot do because they don't listen. Prabhuji, this is ye to karte aa rahe na. Mera grandfather kar rahe the, wo bhi kar rahe the, bhi kar rahe. What will you tell them? Because they respect so much. You cannot shout at them. If you shout at them, Prabhuji, ye aakhri baar na ye bas, this is the last time. Agli saal to hum Ganesh Utsav nahi karenge. Next time you are not going to. Next year you find, and my wife is telling what to do. What I cannot do? See, you tell my wife. What I am going to tell the wife? She says, you know, Prabhuji, Ganesh to Krishna ka bade bhakt hai na, main kya karu. They preached also. Anyhow, that is also not even real karma kanda. But still, very, very difficult. Kaduva Chauth either. You hear it, you come to North India, but they say Kaduva Chauth or something, they follow it like anything. It is only just one glimpse of karma kanda, but ultimately, so many things are there. And now, if you are from South Indian Brahmin, then he starts doing 1,000 mudras in front of Tulsi. Rupa Goswami don't accept mudras. A few things, okay, pretty words. But Rupa Goswami told mudras, we don't accept. So Prabhupada made very simple deity worship. Now if you send a South Indian Brahmin there, he will do all kinds of things which Rupa Goswami told not required. So, very, very difficult. And greatest opponents, be careful, karma kanda. And within karma kanda, astrology, most dangerous. Most dangerous. Like one Brahmachari went to astrologer recently. That astrologer knows me. He comes and I contact him for Vastu and for our temple. He knows Vastu. One Brahmachari from somewhere. He just came. Then he called me, Prabhuji, aap ek bandi se koi hai, mero kaun hai? Then I understood, he doesn't belong to our temple. He went into the astrologer. He told me, he asked the astrology. Astrologer, see, tell me what is a good time for me, I want to get married. Then he called me. Then I told the astrologer to tell him that you are thinking like that, that itself was is a bad time. And that person so it can enter anywhere. Why go to astrology? So karma kanda is very dangerous. Okay. We stop here. Some 2 points are there. And refutation, we'll do it tomorrow. I was supposed to do it now itself. But it's very long. So we'll do it tomorrow. Refutation of karma kanda. Very dangerous. Hare Krishna.